Wi-Fi party line.
That was the Partridge Family's Doesn't Somebody Want to Be Wanted, followed by Edison Lighthouse's Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, as Kay Billy's super sounds of the 70s weekend just keeps on trucking.
Sci-Fi Party Line, number 31, Inglourious Basterds, Quentin Tarantino, and Ramblings.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat, and we have back again, Ryan. Say what's up.
Hey, how's it going?
Yay, we're doing great. And Eric, of course.
Hi.
And a newbie, Dina.
Hi there.
ATL in the house. How about that? Woo! Today's episode, we'll be discussing Inglourious Basterds, a movie that I did not want to see at first, but I heard such nice things and was challenged by Ryan to see it and Eric. And after the initial shock of the hatred or the pistivity of the Jewish people, can't say it, it's a good thing. It was a good movie. I didn't realize there was so much anger there still, maybe. I don't know. Thoughts? Anybody jump on in? I'm dying.
It definitely had a great deal of anger, but that is why I think Quentin at the beginning had Landa to tell why the Germans hated the Jews, which is really for no reason, so that people can see that they were just randomly just killing for no reason, you know, and then they can get past the whole idea how cruel it was, I guess, by the end of the movie.
What a tremendously hostile world a rat must endure. Yet not only does he survive, he thrives. Because our little foe has an instinct for survival and preservation second to none. And that, monsieur, is what a Jew shares with a rat.
Ryan, what you thinking?
Yes.
How did you do this? How did you feel about this movie? Were you excited? Did you like it? What was going on with you?
I was really excited because I really like Tarantino, but I was really nervous because it didn't seem like he got the best reviews coming out of the Cannes Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And everybody was saying that the movie was too long, it was too slow, it was too Tarantino, which for me is fine. I go to his movies to see what he has to say. And I loved it. It's I really think the movie could have just been called Hanging with the Nazis.
Oh.
Wow.
Mostly, I don't know if you noticed, but the movie was basically just three really big scenes of people talking around tables. There was the opening scene with the French dairy farmer that was awesome, and then there was the big scene with the bastards and the Nazis in the basement, in the bar, and then there's the awesome scene with Colonel Landa, I think was his name, when he does his little twist. Like the whole movie was built around those three tables, basically. So for me, I love hearing Tarantino just have his characters talk, and I could just watch him. It's half the time I feel like it's just 20 different characters talking for Tarantino. And for me, I love the way he uses language, and I love the tension, that opening scene. And you could hear a pin drop in our theater when that thing was going on. I love that. So
yeah.
I really didn't have any problems with it at all. The only thing that I thought was weird was Adam Sandler originally, I think, was going to be the guy that Eli Roth played. And I kept on seeing Adam Sandler the whole time when that guy was swinging the baseball bat. He was the Bear Jew.
Oh, he was so cute. Donnie, he was adorable.
He reminded me of like a young Lou Ferrigno or something.
You are the Hulk. They paid me green.
Oh, God, I'm never not going to see that anymore now. Thank you for ruining that.
He had just enough of crazed look in his eye.
But he looks so innocent. Well, you know, he looks so young and innocent and bright-eyed, and then here he is bashing somebody's head off with a baseball bat. It was off-putting, not sexy. No.
I kept on imagining Adam Sandler going all Waterboy on somebody with that baseball bat.
Adam Sandler would have been too much.
Yeah,
because Mike Myers was in it. It just would have been too, oh, God.
I didn't recognize him at first. He said something. I was like, oh, my God, that's him. Because he said something kind of Austin Powers-y.
Oh, behave.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, there he is.
Right. Yeah, you could hear awkward times where people would laugh in the theater when they finally realized it was him.
Yeah.
Like, there was just a moment where it was just a shot of somebody looking at him, and, like, you could hear the light bulb going off in someone's head where they just started laughing when it was quiet. That was kind of a cool, cool stunt casting.
That happened where I was, too. Yeah.
What do you think, Eric?
Wow. I haven't even had a chance to think about it for this discussion. But
you had a pen and paper, dude. I thought you were prepared.
I had all these other things going through my mind before we did this. And, you know, if I didn't, though, I mean, I gushed over Transformers several weeks ago. But that is small potatoes compared to my fandom for Quentin Tarantino and his work.
Uh-oh.
Respect, though.
Man crush.
Oh, God, I'm a huge Tarantino fan. He's, when I first saw Pulp Fiction, when it came out on video originally, that led to the whole me loving movies the way I love them now. Everything about how I look at movies now critically and in every way, it all goes back to that time after I saw Pulp Fiction. Because before that, I was just a casual moviegoer, and ever since, I've been this crazy, hypercritical, whatever person. And I mean, I've been an apologist for everything he's ever done that people didn't like. You know, I can't help it. I completely gush over any and everything he does. Obviously, I have my favorites, but even the ones that aren't my favorites, I can still find good in anything he does. Because I don't know, I'm just so wrapped up in it.
He's a genius.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. It's not my favorite of his work, but that's because he has such great work. But I definitely pretty much loved it all the way around. Yes. And, like, with his last entry, which would, I guess, be Death Proof from Grindhouse. Well, see, no,
oh,
I like
wait,
that.
Wait, was that a groan?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a groan.
Oh,
a little bit
come of a groan.
Yeah, with Death Proof, it wasn't, again, that was definitely not my favorite Quentin Tarantino work, but I still pretty much loved it for its own reasons. But despite the fact that I loved it, there were still certain issues that I had with Death Proof that I was glad were not present in this movie.
Yeah, because they talked too much and they put me asleep in Death
Proof. The thing is, in Death Proof, especially, because I know what Ryan was saying about loving to hear Tarantino's characters talk because I love the same thing. But in Death Proof, it was getting a little bit too Tarantino doing Tarantino.
Yeah.
Weird hearing a bunch of girls saying stuff that Tarantino thinks girls say when they're all alone.
But. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe that's...
Because the girls were thinking too much like as if they had like a Quentin Tarantino mind of their own, which is a little, what? they were saying things that were just a little too, you know... too surreal, and that's the only thing if I can think of anything that was a knock in Death. And they had too many. Obviously, we all like Tarantino's cultural references, but it was a little bit heavy in Death Proof, a little bit out of place. These people were too keen, like on different kinds of references in Death Proof. So, fast forward in Inglourious Basterds. What I liked about this, especially being in a different era, a different time, a period of time, it was great because now Tarantino has to think outside of his own box. Because he can't use all the cultural references he usually does, because all these characters inhabit the 40s, so most of that stuff goes out the window. So that's what I really liked, is how this dialogue was still Tarantino dialogue, but set in the time period of the 40s, And especially when certain characters were speaking in other languages, especially obviously German or French, even though it was subtitles, you still totally got that Tarantino-esque feeling of it without it being too stilted, without it being too, like, who would say that? You know, that's like, you know, that sounds, you know, but it was more naturalistic, at least the dialogue anyway. So, yeah, I'll just give a pause now so long, 'cause I could just keep going.
Well, my thing in movies always is the costuming. I thought it was superb. It looked it looked really good. You know, you really hate the Nazis, but they are some good-looking bastards, let me tell you. I mean, yeah,
They got good graphic designers and fashion designers.
Right? And the German, like, what was the actress's name? The German lady who got choked and blah, blah.
Diane Kruger.
Thank you. Her suit in the basement was just superb. I couldn't stop looking at that suit.
It was bad, hair. Girl.
I know. My God. But sorry, guys. We had to go there for a second. Yeah. She had a matte lipstick that was just to die for. Now let me stop.
And she makes German sexy.
You still get us in that premiere?
You speak German better than your friends? No. Have I been shot? Yes. I don't see me tripping the light fantastique up at the carpet anytime soon. However, there's something you don't know. There have been two recent developments regarding Operation Kino. One, the venue has been changed from the Ritz to a much smaller venue.
Norm's changed at the last minute. It's not very dramatic. Why the hell is Gerbil doing stuff so damn peculiar?
It probably has something to do with the second development.
Which is?
Der Führer is attending the premiere.
Brad Pitt in this movie. The idea of some sort of cowboy, half Apache, coming in, doing stuff to help the Germans kill Hitler. It was just, I just liked that idea. It just seemed like really out of place. I love, Brad Pitt had a little bit of Tyler Durden-ish in here, maybe just a little tad of it.
And the accent.
Yeah, the accent wasn't bad.
Well, the accent played to that joke, like, the whole time. You're like, why is this crazy accent? And then it plays off. Like, everybody I knew that even hated that accent, as soon as he started trying to talk Italian, Italian.
That was beautiful.
That made the whole thing worthwhile.
Yeah.
That was so funny. I was dying.
I thought maybe he was going to suck it up and maybe try a little. He didn't.
That part was so funny to me, not only because of that and how it was so unexpected, and that was a great planted built-in joke, like you said, with the accent. That was already funny. But then the reason on top of that why I was dying was because I'm sure it's no accident that Tarantino made Brad Pitt look just like Marlon Brando as the Godfather.
He did!
Yeah, the jawline.
Yes!
The jawline, the tux.
The cotton balls.
Yes! Exactly! I thought that too.
And then the two bastards at his side, they looked just like the young Michael Corleone and Fredo. Yeah. And I was like, oh no! Oh my God. That was so too much for me to handle because obviously I love the Godfather as well. And, that was too much.
That's why movie nerds love Tarantino.
Yes. I know Italian, but he really didn't know, but like three words.
But and I also wanted to say about Brad that I've already said to everyone. I know
he's hot, like, and sexy.
No, that's definitely not.
That's not what he said in the pre-show.
Going back to, I think the first movie I saw him in was Interview with a Vampire, but going back to that time and since, he was, in a lot of the movies he was in the 90s, I remember, he was kind of the same person in all his different roles back then. But in the last three movies I've seen Brad Pitt in, Inglourious Bastards, Burn After Reading, and Benjamin Button, all three of these movies, Brad Pitt has been so off the wall, completely different person. It's completely blown me away. Like, it is phenomenal. Like, it's like, wow, that's the same guy in those three movies. If anyone out there has seen those three movies, oh my goodness, what a contrast. It's unbelievable.
Burn After Reading, I watch it so often.
Really? It's good?
Wow. I love it.
I love it. I couldn't imagine watching it over and over, though.
Oh, God, it's so hilarious.
You're talking to the woman that's seen Fight Club like 100 times.
Maybe true, but this is not Fight Club. It's good. It's something else.
12 Monkeys.
It's Coen, you know, the Coen brothers.
That it is.
Yeah. Well, I didn't expect them to really get to... I didn't think they were going to kill Hitler.
9999999
No.
I thought maybe it was going to be something weird and he was going to, you know, go on to do something, but they actually killed Hitler.
Yes.
They got
yes.
to do it.
And they didn't waste their time. It just happened.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be all drawn out and it just happened.
It was beautiful.
It was awesome because I was weighing that the whole time, the whole movie. I was kept thinking to myself, is he going to get off or isn't he? Is he? And I really seriously did not know until it finally happened. Like, I was back and forth the whole time in my mind watching the movie.
One of the taglines was something like doing what you thought history, how it should have been or something like that, and how you figured history should have been. And so most people would have just killed Hitler and whoever else was in the crew. So they kept making that a point, like, if we kill these four people, it'll all be over.
Yeah.
Oh, and another shock to me was just like the week before the movie came out, that week, I got the original Inglourious Basterds from Netflix.
Remake?
Well, yeah. No. Well, no. It's not a remake. It's loosely.
A reimagining.
But not even a loose, very ever so loosely, like a reimagining from, I think, 78 or something like that. And obviously, Tarantino was, I guess, he's obviously a fan of it. I mean, he was personally inspired by it. But it's a really low budget, Dirty Dozen, really, really campy, whatever you want to call it. And I watched it, and okay, I was like, okay, I get it. You know, you have to kind of put your grindhouse cap on, and I was like, okay, I get it. But I was like, because although it's a bunch of camp, there is a certain discernible plot, and I was thinking, okay, I guess that's what this new Inglourious Basterds is going to be like. And so I was afraid that I had ruined it for myself.
Why did you even do that?
Because, well, why not? I don't know. That's what I do.
But I did it afterwards.
But thankfully, though, actually, it was so much more departure than I was expecting. So actually, I ruined nothing. And so I was happy by that fact. Because quickly, in the original, there's some U.S. soldiers. And actually, they were all, like, misfits. And they were getting sent away to like a army penal colony, like over in Europe, and they're just transporting them to like, and except they get ambushed by some Germans, and so these Americans who are all misfits, they all get like basically out of captivity after the Germans ambush the convoy, and so now they're on a mission to like sneak to the Switzerland border. But then on the way, they come across another group of German soldiers who they kill, but they eventually find out they just accidentally killed a covert, super, like, special forces American army unit who was disguised as Germans, and that the Americans in the German uniforms were actually on this special top-secret mission to go kill some Nazis, and so then the Basterds in the original are made to feel guilty. And so this group of misfits tries to complete the mission of, like, the supposed, like, special whatever. And I'm probably making this movie sound 10 times more grand than it really is, because it's really up there on par with, like, Meatballs or something.
Wow.
Like, in reality. I mean, that's the tone. I mean, it's really, really goofy, but I'm probably making it sound so much more grand by describing the plot. So that's the plot I thought we might have, and obviously it was nothing like that, and I'm so glad it's not. And I was going to say, too, because obviously, just like everyone else probably, I thought the movie, the new one, was going to focus mainly just on the Basterds doing whatever it is they're doing. And it was a bit of a surprise that it didn't. Obviously, it made up for it in so many other ways. And I was afraid other people in the theater would be disappointed by that, but apparently everyone seems to be happy.
I don't think anybody saw the original or knew anything about it. In the middle of one of the other table discussions, when they were at the restaurant, the French restaurant, and the Jewish lady, I forgot, Emmanuel, was talking with, what is he, a colonel or whatever, crazy German guy, whatever.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was
yes.
at that point that I realized, oh, there's a lot of talking in this movie. And it's there's this movie about this chick who's has a movie theater. And why are we here? Why are we talking about this movie theater? And I just, until we, until she said we're going to blow them up, I just could yes. not figure out
yes.
why there wasn't shooting going on, why we weren't killing any Nazis.
Yeah, there's one moment in that scene that I thought made the whole scene worthwhile was when she went up to the table and the colonel sits down and like asks her how she's doing, and then he asks her what she wants. He's like, oh, you want milk.
Yes.
And I was like, whoa, does he know? Like the moment I got like a chill in my spine, like he already knows. He's playing games with her. Like
I couldn't tell even at the end because he stared at her and he said he had something else to say and he couldn't remember. And I was like, does he not, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know?
That's Tarantino though. Like we never got any mention even once where the rope burn on Brad Pitt's neck came from. They never even brought it up.
Yeah.
They show it all the time.
I thought it was a rope burn. I thought it was like a scar from being cut.
Yeah, I thought he was like ear to ear.
Yeah.
Attempted.
I'm assuming, yeah, something like we don't even know what it was. I thought that's the stuff that's great about him, is that you can watch it and just enjoy it, or you can watch it and think of 1,000 questions to ask the next time you watch it.
But I wanted to say about that particular scene that you just brought up too. Never in my life did I ever see what is it, a strudel? Is that what that's called?
Strudel, yeah.
I'd never seen one that looked so delicious ever in my life. I'm not a fan of like dessert pastries or anything like that. But when I was watching the movie and he was like, oh, the cream, you know, and I was looking at it, I was like licking my lips, and I'm not even into that kind of food. I just wanted to say that.
What was the gratuitous doggy style scene? What was that? With the lady and the French lady and the guy, and he's like, yeah, he's heard. Nobody remembered that. It was, and the only
that's
person that
because they wanted, they know, they just wanted to show you that she was more than a translator.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
It's just so weird. I'm just like, all of a sudden, we're at a table, blah, 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 doggy style, and then blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow.
Oh, no.
I think I was just keeping you awake.
Yeah, I think I was just the Tarantino mindset, and so it just seemed like, yeah, this makes sense to me. Like, you know, like something out of Kill Bill or something, just cutting away like that.
It was like a translator in quotations.
Ah, air quotes.
And it's weird, too. I mean, because she was the same actress who played the French translator in Kill Bill Volume 1 for Ono Ishii or whatever.
Yeah.
Did you see the tiger hat she had? She had a big
Yes, I noticed that.
Tiger like on leopard. Her head. Leopard with whiskers and crap.
Funny. I did not notice it at first, and then when I did, I was all busting up just to myself in a full theater. I was like trying to suppress it because I don't think anyone else knew about it. I was like, oh my god, look at it. Oh, wow.
I don't think there was any part that was funny in that movie I could be quiet about. I just laughed out loud about everything.
There was a lot of people laughing in the theater where I was. They were tickled. There was no clapping at the end.
But people clapping at the end.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, man. Oh, there was a line.
Yeah, we had clapping. I was surprised because, again, I felt like a lot of people might be put off maybe because of the, you know, I don't know who those people are, but the ones who weren't expecting such certain parts of violence. And also just thinking it was going to be like an action movie when it wasn't. But no, yeah, there was a great applause at the end. And
some people kind of quietly left. I don't know. After it was done, I was like, wow, Jewish people are still pretty angry. And it was just like, wow, man, that's...
Nazis are the only bad guys left other than aliens and robots. Like, we can cheer. Everybody can agree that we can kill Nazis and be all right with it.
That's what I
learned that from Indiana Jones.
That's true. It's like you can't exactly take up for the Nazis. You can't just say, well, this is German. You just can't take up for them. So they're evil and it's okay for them to be evil. But wow. I was like, this is some fierce anger there.
It's kind of like when she killed William in the basement.
Yeah.
People were like, oh gosh, no, his child. I'm like, dude, he's a killer. He killed people's children. He's not innocent. Just because he has a son at home does not make him innocent.
I thought he was going to live.
I was hoping she would kill him because I was like, don't let him live. Haven't you guys seen, what is that movie with Al Pacino? Oh, God. Carlito's Way, you always kill your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bummer.
Oh, well, Maximilian has no father.
Yeah, well, he probably won't live long either. Who knows? Anything else, Ryan, Dana, Eric?
Do you guys did you catch Harvey Keitel and Samuel Jackson?
Yeah.
Where?
They were both yeah. voices.
Yeah,
they both came in.
Oh. Yeah.
I started laughing when Harvey Keitel was the guy that Colonel Landa calls, I think, and yes. then gives the phone to Brad Pitt and he tells him, and then Samuel Jackson comes in at one point as a narrator, like halfway through the movie.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
I think he's the guy, like, he was one like explaining like the little asides during the movie.
Yeah. I didn't realize that was Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, I didn't either. I discovered both these things, yeah, after reading after the fact.
Me and one other guy laughed in the theater.
Yeah, he uses Sam so much in his movies. Right off, I could tell it was him.
Yeah.
But yeah, another thing I want to say though about like Tarantino's work now, because obviously his first movies were all that whole, you know, crime done wrong type of thing, and then with Kill Bill and Death Proof, he was kind of just indulging into things that he thinks are fun, I guess. And now with this movie, I like that, you know, now he's doing his take on a particular genre, you know, World War II. Band of Brothers type story, mm-hmm. okay, and he's done his take on it.
Yeah.
But see, so now I'm hoping he continues to think outside the box and does maybe a true Tarantino horror movie, like not Grindhouse, but true horror or true slasher.
Say it.
Or a Tarantino sci-fi.
That's what the world's waiting for.
Really?
I applaud you.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Yes. Absolutely.
He hasn't done one already?
No.
What?
What?
No. How about horror sci-fi?
True. I mean, that works, you know.
Like aliens or something?
That's like his event horizon.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it have funny? Because he always...
Of course it would. It'll have all his, you know, keystones. Because if there's one thing I've noticed... Because here's me going on a diatribe again about my, like, movie exploration. So I've been this movie lover for, you know, over 15 years now, and only recently did I start going deep into the Kubrick stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously I'd seen, like, 2001 or whatever, but I didn't go through his whole body of work until recently. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at one of Kubrick's lesser-known films from the 50s called The Killing, mm-hmm. and I saw it recently, or relatively recently, and I was like, holy crap. Tarantino just like cut and pasted so much stuff for Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, like directly out of that movie, The Killing. Like, it was so obvious, like, wow. But not in a bad way, you know, just like, oh, okay. Just like anybody who knows how George Lucas made Star Wars, just like The Hidden Fortress, the Kurosawa movie.
What?
If you've seen both of those, if you watch both of those movies, if you're very familiar with A New Hope and you go and watch Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress, you'll go, holy crap. Like, you'll think all of a sudden that Star Wars A New Hope is not nearly as original as you thought it was.
Because you can write down, like,
you just made me sad.
If you watch Metropolis.
And, oh, Metropolis,
if you
yes,
watch
I
Metropolis
had,
and read Joseph Campbell and then happen to see Hidden Fortress right after that, you won't think Star Wars is very original.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing because there's a character who's literally... This is a Japanese samurai movie from the 50s. There's a character who is exactly C-3PO. There's exactly R2-D2. There's exactly mm-hmm. Han Solo and Princess Leia, and it's just all right there. And there's the Empire, and there's the Rebels, and then there's something that's a stand-in for the Death Star. It's just like, holy crap. Anyways, that was an aside. But going to The Killing... You can see where Tarantino just grafted all these things straight out of The Killing and used them in his first two movies. And so knowing that and me now knowing how Kubrick operates, and so I know obviously Tarantino's a fan of all film, and especially now I see all the connections to Kubrick's work in him. And see, that's what Kubrick did, was do his take on every genre of film.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm waiting for Tarantino, as we were saying, to do his sci-fi movie, to do his horror movie, do his, even though I'm not into that kind of movie, but like suspense thriller, like His Eyes Wide Shut and his everything else.
Hell, not.
Yeah, well, that's another.
Hell no. Yeah, no, let's not do that.
Unfortunately, we do a sci-fi podcast because I could do this whole episode just.
Yeah, no, I'm going to shut you down right now because Eyes Wide Shut, you know what? No.
Hey, I can teach you of other things. I can.
It was porn without plot.
There's so much more than that.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
I don't want to go down that road right now.
Yeah, we don't have the stuff that you're smoking with that. No.
Well, it's, I mean, think about it. It's just like Clockwork Orange. I mean, yeah. You kind of had to be on something to really enjoy that movie.
Are you admitting anything, Dana? You're admitting
something? Yeah, I kind of enjoyed that movie, so I'm thinking I was on a little something.
There's so much to say about any of those movies.
So do we know what Tarantino is doing next?
Oh, I haven't heard anything.
So he's just riding off.
Oh,
what? Oh, what?
He's supposed to be making a like a British like kind of James Bondish movie with Simon Pegg. Was the last thing I heard of.
That would be awesome.
Oh, that's the thing. Yeah, Simon Pegg was supposed to play which part? He was supposed to play the Michael Myers part, I believe. No, not Michael Myers. He was supposed to play the British officer who was supposed to join the bastards, the one who got caught with the accent. That's who Simon Pegg was supposed to play, but he had to step out because of scheduling reasons. And so what I read was, that's what I'm thinking. But according to what I read on the internet, Simon Pegg like made Tarantino promise that he would let him be in his next movie, whatever it was.
That would be cool.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds has been talked about since like 2001, 2002.
Serious?
Yeah. Tarantino's always been saying, yeah, I'm working on it, and it's never happened until finally now. Yeah, pieces came together. Yeah.
And he made it fast, so I know Kill Bill took forever to make, but this, I think he started like October, November last year.
Wow.
So he got it done in less than a year. So maybe he's ready to start making stuff a little bit quicker, because I don't want to wait another 4 years or 5 years for another Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he needs to get on it. So any last thoughts on Inglourious Basterds? I guess it's the only reason it's on a Sci-Fi Party Line is because it was an alternate universe.
Exactly.
Very alternate universe.
Exactly.
Anything else, folks?
Each and every man under my command owes me 100 Nazi scalps. And I want my scalps.
Mr. District 9 show.
Where were you? Weren't you? You said you were doing something.
I was getting married.
Oh, yeah, that's what you said. Congratulations.
Schedule next time.
Oh, yeah, you were
so
pretty
good.
Busy.
I made time to see it three times, though.
What? Wow. Oh, my God.
Wow. I'm going one more time, too. I can't.
Wow.
I love it.
Wow.
You know,
District 9 to me for this particular year was like the Fight Club of science fiction because it blew my mind a little.
I think it's going to affect the way movies are made for like the next. I think it's like The Matrix.
Yeah,
I think
it was something
like. We're going to, like, Bullet Time was like the new big thing. Every movie is going to be all like handheld documentary style for like the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I thought it was like, what's that movie called?
Cloverfield.
Exactly, Cloverfield, but done in a better way.
Yes.
More tastefully, yeah. I still like Cloverfield.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Haven't seen that. Don't hit me.
Oh, you had to see it in the theaters. I don't know if it's worth
it. Your ibuprofen, so you don't get a headache.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I did get pretty sick by watching it
I have to take somebody every single time, like a new person, to see District 9. Just for the thumbnail falling off scene. Like, I took my dad. And I watched his face when that scene was coming, just to see him like get off.
Yeah, that part reminded me of the Jeff Goldblum fly.
Yep.
Oh God, the fly.
Yep.
Oh God, that's a great scene.
There's so many movies that thing reminds me of. There's parts that remind me of RoboCop, like when the robot suit, like, and the way like the people blow up. I was like, man, this dude was raised in the 80s. Was watching very violent movies as a little kid.
Oh yeah, there's stuff I wanted to say about the director that we didn't get to. Get in the last show because I was looking at stuff while we were just talking, and I was looking at the director's little bio and stuff because, you know, he's basically unheard of, and he's only like 28 or 29 years old right now. I'm like,
he's crazy good,
and I was looking at his resume, and before this is obviously his directorial debut, but before that he was just basically working special effects. And
yeah, he started a company.
Yeah, and apparently, I was looking at the date, his first job listed is like working on Stargate, like back in the early days of Stargate. But I was doing the math, he was like 18 years old at the time. So
yeah,
I was like, wow. So this guy, yeah, he's been in it from a young age, and so he's probably been just waiting for this time. He's I can kind of tell he's had all these ideas in his mind, you know, just waiting to put it all together from his different influences.
And have you seen Tempot?
No, I have not.
Check out Tempot if you get a chance, because it's he did the Alive and Joburg short that was the one that's kind of what District 9 was based on.
Mm-hmm.
But then right after that, he did Tempot, and the robot that's in Alive and Joburg, it kind of gets recycled for Tempot, and it's the same kind of documentary style. You have to see it. Nobody saw it. I don't know why.
No, I've never
Alive
heard
and Joburg
of
came
it.
Out like 4 or 5 years. People were freaking out, and then he did Tempot as a follow up, and then like no one really talked about it. And then he disappeared, and then he did all the Halo, like, the commercials, and people were freaking out about him again. But the Tempot short's really good.
That's T-E-M-P?
B-O-T, yeah.
Yeah, he'll okay. put it in the show notes. Cause this is
it's awesome.
Oh, I just want to know something.
Do you want him to make a sequel to District 9 right away, or do you want to see him do something else? I want District 10 or whatever it's going to be that thing that, like, in 15 years, it's like, oh, yeah, you guys remember District 9? This guy made all those awesome movies. He always talked about doing a sequel. I want to do something original. I want people to forget about District 9, and then all of a sudden people are like, oh, yeah, I remember that movie. Like, the way Back to the Future. I don't know if that was a little...
So you don't want him to try to do something, like, maybe 3 years, perhaps?
Years would be perfect.
It would be perfect, but... I mean, because I don't want to see the same style, but I don't want to see something so different that it's like, what is this? You know?
If it's going to come out in 3 years, he'd have to make it like in the next, start making it like in the next year. And I want to see him do one other thing in between, maybe.
See, I had suggested when we discussed this on that episode, I had suggested that maybe if and when they make a sequel to District 9, maybe they do kind of like the Alien franchise, where Alien is Ridley Scott, but now here comes... James Cameron or somebody, some other unknown person, comes in and puts their whole spin on it. So it's a whole different style and tone, keeps in line with the original, but takes it a whole other direction. And, you know, we could focus on somebody different, or it doesn't have to be about Weakest. I just like saying his name.
Sort of like
or
anything Moon. Else.
Or, you know, how I think Moon, how I read Moon may go if and when it comes out with its sequel, because Moon's supposed to be part of the trilogy as well. And so, yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's what I saw. Because for me, District 9 is so good and perfect the way it is. Yep. You don't really want to mess with it. You don't want to mess
with
its memory.
That's what I'm thinking.
See, that's how Alien kind of went down, too, though. I think because I thought Alien was like a late 70s, early like 80, 81 movie. And then Aliens took like, I thought, like another 5 or 6 years. Like people kind of knew of Alien, but it was kind of, its time had passed. And then all of a sudden this huge war, gigantic, you know, violent action movie came out. Maybe Quentin Tarantino can make his sci-fi with us.
Nice.
Don't get me started thinking about that. I'm just thinking Tarantino's 2001 be like, because you know I'd just be so, you know, it would have all of a sudden like these amazing like special effects that you never saw coming in sci-fi. Yet the movie wouldn't be about the effects. It would, there's so much raw goodness right there.
I want him to do Star Trek.
What?
Whoa!
Quentin Tarantino could do all the odd, numbered Star Trek.
I draw the line. I draw the line.
Oh, come on!
Right there.
I think we're going too far.
No, I will fight you, dude.
Okay, here. what is that guy's name? Q? Is it Q? The guy who always would come in and just like. Is it Q?
It's Q. That's
Q.
Like the guy who would just take people out of their situation and then, like, put them on a planet, and there was some kind of like puzzle. Imagine if that character was written by Tarantino.
I mean, that's all great, but see...
If you put it like that,
I don't know. Other directors have done their sellout movies, like Tim Burton did his Planet of the Apes.
And he did that really bad Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I thought the factory was okay.
Yeah. I love Smoke Crack.
But I thought it was okay.
I like Tim Burton, but when he does the big stuff, I don't really like
Tim Burton is...
And we also talked about, I don't know if you were there, Ryan, when we were talking about Moon, and then we brought up Shyamalan is going to do, M. Night is going to do
his sellout,
which is going to be, Avatar.
I'm so nervous.
So I don't know.
Stomach is turning already.
Yep.
I don't know if I would want Tarantino to do like a like.
He's never done one though.
That is true. That makes it intriguing.
His closest sellout was doing the Elmore Leonard, the Jackie Brown thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely
right. Oh, wow. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, no one remembers that.
Oh, I do.
Okay. I remember that Sam had bad hair in that movie.
Oh, yeah, my God, I forgot about
that. I remember I was so excited when I saw that movie the first time in the theater because at the time Chris Tucker was like blowing up as an actor and I didn't know he was going to be in it and he was in the beginning and I was like, oh, yes, this is so And then, of course, he gets killed like
I was all excited because I thought Michael Keaton's career was going to come back, just like, you know, like, always bring somebody's career back,
yes,
and then
I thought
he disappeared.
I thought Keaton was going to have a comeback. I thought, what's his name, Robert Forrester, the bail boss. Yep. I thought he was going to have he had a minor comeback, but not
He does
main.
A lot of TV shows still, I
what
think.
What did happen to Michael Keaton?
Yeah, that is a good question.
Man. Oh, I want to know who he pissed off.
Well, no, but Keaton did come out with a personal project, a movie that he directed and starred in not too many months ago. It got good reviews, but it's not like a main... That's why I can't even remember its name. It's not a mainstream film. But it got good reviews.
He was like one of the biggest dudes of all time. He's like...
Well, because people want him to be Mr. Mom and stuff. Like, you
know. It's Batman.
But, yeah. And also, I thought... Going back to Jackie Brown talk, since Robert De Niro was going to be in that movie, and I was thinking, oh, De Niro, Tarantino, but again, that was another non-factor.
Robert
De Niro. So, yes, how his star has fallen.
What?
His star has not.
He's
Yes, he's no Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, Godfather.
He doesn't have to be.
He doesn't have to be that guy. But I mean, that caliber of acting
you
and
know what's quality. Talking. If this was Fox, I'd mute you.
Wait, what are we talking about? Analyze this, analyze that, meet the Fockers.
The Fockers, come on.
I didn't see that, so it doesn't exist.
Do you guys know what movie he's going to be in, though?
What?
He's going to be in, Robert Rodriguez is doing Machete.
Oh.
Oh, Machete, yeah.
What is that?
And De Niro's going to be in it.
What is this movie? I don't know anything.
Oh, man. Do you remember Grindhouse?
Grindhouse?
Oh, yeah.
The first trailer that played at Grindhouse, if you saw it at the theater, was Machete. And they're actually making the movie.
The fake preview with the tattooed chest guy.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And it's a really weird cast. There's a lot of weird people in it. Like Lindsay Lohan.
Oh. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing,
burned up or chopped up or something.
What do you say?
I would love to see Firecrotch get burned or chopped.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd agree with you.
See, here's the thing. I'm a huge fan of Robert Rodriguez as well. And, he was, before he was going to do this Machete movie, he was going to do a remake of Barbarella, of all things.
Yes!
Oh, God!
But that's been shelved away or something.
Yeah, he has more projects to do.
Yeah, and that's funny. I didn't know you guys knew Barbara.
What do you think you're talking to? I mean, God.
It's bizarre. Anyways, and then also, Robert Rodriguez's kids' movie Shorts came out the same opening weekend as Inglourious Blast.
Oh.
Bastards and got completely blown out.
I heard it was horrible, though. Was it good?
Oh, don't ask me. I couldn't watch it. I mean, yeah.
I heard it was horrible.
Dude, I love all his Spy Kids movies, and I have to see Shorts, I haven't heard anyone who liked it.
I love Spy Kids 1 and 2 from...
What, 3? You didn't like 3?
Oh, God.
No. Sylvester Stallone?
Y'all are embarrassing me
right now. I like Sylvester Stallone. I like Colonel Bond, but the third one was some ridiculousness.
Well, I'll give you Sharkboy and Lava Girl 3D was ridiculous, but Spy Kids 3D...
I do like the fact that he uses a lot of Latino people in his movies.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Because there's a whole family of beautiful, hot, gorgeous, wonderful Antonio Banderas.
Wow.
Well, Peter Barron is not hot, but he's something.
Love the Latinos.
Calm down. Let's calm down.
That's why I'm glad we have females on this podcast.
Thank God.
Great.
Oh, man.
Y'all can always talk about Megan Fox in every episode.
It's scary.
Oh, for crying out loud. Dude, hey, really? This was a Megan Fox free episode, and then you just turned around. What are you doing?
Never. Are you gonna? Is anybody gonna go see Jennifer's body?
I'm gonna see Megan's body.
It's delicious.
I set you up for that.
Not for Jennifer.
You're not gonna see it? A good cheesy horror movie?
Yeah, I don't like horror. I'm not really into horror. I will not be on that podcast, let me tell you.
I can care less
on that episode.
That's gonna be an all boy podcast. Yeah, that's gonna be all guys on that one.
So, I hear it already.
Trying to get that drunken cast off the ground, that could be our first.
Oh, yeah. Drunk cast. Yeah, no.
What else? What else is coming out this year? I feel like this was the last big movie I was excited for, other than
Avatar. Gamer, Avatar.
Oh, Sherlock. Gamer, good call.
Yeah. That's next week.
Can I be excited for Christmas Carol in 3D because it looks really
good? Oh God, no! You mean another zombie Christmas?
That's what it's gonna be. Oh my God!
Hey, what is
Sherlock
this?
Holmes? Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, Sherlock
Holmes. Yeah, Sherlock Holmes. But let's get back to Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
I have a bone to
pick.
I
don't know what this is.
All right. Dina, did you like Polar Express, otherwise known as Zombie Express?
No, I didn't see it, but the 3D on Christmas Carol was awesome in Harry Potter IMAX.
Yeah, you know what? I went to Avatar Day, and I saw the 3D Avatar stuff, and that kicked Christmas Carol's butt. The 3D in that, this sounds really dumb, but when the very last shot, it's like 16 minutes and it's two like blue furry little aliens like getting ready to kiss, but it's like all 3D and you're in the jungle, and then like it started to fade to black, and then it just had like the 2D text of like Avatar.
Yeah.
I was like viscerally like upset. I'm like, it was the first time I felt like I was like in the middle of a theme park and someone just like knocked me out. I was like, God damn it, I want to go back. I want to go back. Take me back now.
Get that boy's cotton candy.
It was really weird. It was like 3D, whatever, bunch of furry aliens, whatever. Like, I've seen James Cameron throw like drop ships and mech suits and aliens like 1,000 times. But after like the last like 2 or 3 shots, I'm like, Christmas can't come fast enough. I'm ready. Sign me up. I bought my tickets.
Oh my God, really?
That's awesome. I'm totally ready to.
I don't know. Today was my first time seeing the Avatar trailer. And I'm not sure I responded well to it.
They made a big mistake with that. They should have done the Avatar Day thing, right? And they should have had a bunch of nerds like me all excited on a Friday, and then all weekend we tell everybody we know Avatar is going to be the best thing ever. And then on Monday, after everybody heard their people that they trust and not like Newsweek and Time saying it's going to change the world, then on Monday people can watch and be like, oh yeah, this is all right. This could be cool. But I remember my friend telling me about it, so it's going to be great. Instead, they showed it on like Thursday morning, and like the very first time you see an avatar, right? It's a 9-foot tall, oddly proportioned, blue, furry cat creature.
Yes.
And the first shot...
Horrible, dude.
The first shot is in like a really antiseptic, like medical bay with humans in the shot. So what's going to happen? They're going to look like cartoon characters.
Well, I actually like that shot. I didn't mind that shot. I didn't care for that. It's when they got in the jungle and it looks all World of Warcraft, and I was like, what is this?
I'm telling you. Did you like King Kong?
Did I like what?
Did you like King Kong at all? Did you like the middle part when they're on Skull Island? Like when King Kong's fighting the dinosaurs and stuff?
It was too long.
Okay. Yeah, well, if you just wanted to see the middle part, like the cool 45 minutes of action with the bugs and the dinosaurs, that's what Avatar looked like. I felt like I was watching King Kong, but with, like, blue furry guys.
See, I'm ready to love and accept Avatar in every way possible. I want it to be amazingly groundbreaking when I actually see the whole film. But I also had reservations from seeing the trailer, because as stunning as some parts or elements of it were, I also had flashbacks to thinking about... Star Wars Episode 1 with it reminded me of the Gungans a bit. With being CGI heavy and the like lack of technology business.
Yeah.
It also reminded me of Episode 3 where we were all anticipating seeing the Wookiee homeworld in Kashyyyk and all that stuff. And that was cool, but it's the problem.
That felt like a video
prequels,
game.
Exactly. You're seeing amazing things, I guess. You're seeing the most cutting edge CGI at the time, I guess. But at the same time, you don't really care because you're so you feel disjointed from the action on the screen, and you're just like, ugh. And that's what worried me about the preview.
I felt the same way because I thought on the like the QuickTime trailer, I didn't think that the Avatar dudes looked very good. Like that first shot, I was like, oh, this is stupid. Like he's really wearing like a half-see little like surgery like bib overall thing. Like, am I going to see a shot of like a cat person's butt walking around and stuff? Like, I'm not. And like, but there's this shot because again, bringing back to Aliens, Sigourney Weaver's in it.
Oh yeah, and, I forgot about that.
She's just, as soon as I see a movie with her in it, I take it seriously because I love everything she's in. But there's a moment where
yes, I love Galaxy.
Me too.
I can't say I saw that movie.
Working Girl.
What? Yeah. That's a good movie. But, it is, Ryan. It's good.
All right. It's on my list at the very bottom.
I'm telling you, if you like Star Trek, you'll love it.
Okay. Oh, no, Galaxy Quest is awesome.
If I like Star Trek, I liked Galaxy Quest, but I don't know about this other movie. Okay, so.
Whatever.
All right, so Avatar. Back to Avatar.
Okay.
There's a moment in the jungle where the main guy, the guy from Terminator, he's walking around in his avatar, and it's probably like the first time he's walked or whatever. But trailing behind him is Sigourney Weaver's version of an avatar. And they do like one shot really close up to her face. And now I finally understand like what they're saying about how it's going to be groundbreaking, because it looked like it was Sigourney Weaver with the most incredible makeup that actually like takes volume away from her face. Like, it's this really tall, really skinny, stretched out creature that couldn't possibly be real, but I swear to God it had Sigourney Weaver's eyes and like her chin and her mouth, and I'm like, and when she starts acting, you're like, all right, maybe I'm too sensitive to this and maybe I'm too much into animation, but like, this seems like something I haven't seen. Like, this felt like when I saw the really bad Incredible Hulk, the first movie, and then I went and saw Golem. And I'm like, whoa, this is something different, and this is a big step over everything else I've seen. That felt like the same moment, where it's like, we've seen CG characters, and Benjamin Button was amazing, but like, this was like possibly the next step. It looked really cool. And it as soon as that scene came up, I sat up in my chair, I'm like, all right, I'm paying attention. I can't wait for this.
Can't wait.
Yeah. But I don't know. I didn't respond to it well when I first saw it, because I thought it was just going to be robots and something.
It looks... I think that trailer was edited really bad. I thought it was like, I don't need to like learn the story of Avatar yet. I just need to be sold on like.
Yes, I was.
And they should have. I don't think a normal like normally the trailers get cut by people who only make trailers, and because James Cameron is such a big deal, I'm gonna put money on the fact that either someone on his team or like he personally edited it, and like he can wield that power. But I think that was a big mistake. Whatever happened, I think it should have been like. The one thing I keep on going back to is, do you guys remember episode 2 for Star Wars where they had the Darth Vader breathing teaser?
Yeah.
Where it was just shots of fading up and down to Darth Vader's breathing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I thought they could have done the same thing with like a heartbeat in the background, and then like the last shot is Sam, like the shot of his face, like his eyes going wide, and then cut to the avatar and go fade to black and tell everybody to come and see it at Christmas, because I thought they did a bad job with the trailer.
Yeah. Totally agree. I had the same exact feelings. And again, this is what I said about District 9, which I loved about District 9, is that the initial trailers were all very obscure.
Yeah.
Yep.
For lack of a better term. Yep. And I love that. And
yep. I didn't know what was going to happen walking into that movie.
Yep. And that's how I like it. And that's another fault I found in the Avatar one. I was like, even though I'm sure there's so much more to this movie than what I just saw, I still don't like knowing what I know now. Whoops.
Yeah. Yep. I'd have to agree with that, because I saw the mech and pictures of that, and I was like, oh, okay, Sigourney Weaver, you got a mech,
yep, exactly.
Blah, 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 I'm in. And then I saw these blue things. I was like, and then I was surprised by my reaction, too, because it's like, well, you watch weird crap all the time. Why are you not responding to this well? And I was kind of curious about why I didn't respond to it.
I really think it's going to be the closest thing we've ever had to live-action anime. Like, there's shots in it that look just like shots out of, like, Akira, like the way it was cut together. Like, there's a close-up shot of, like, the military general guy with the scratches across his head, like the scars.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of poses and a lot of layout that feel very much like Akira, Ghost in the Shell.
See, Sin City did that fairly well. Like,
yeah.
Live-action, you know, anime kind of look to it. Mm-hmm. And... And also with Avatar, when I first saw the trailer, I've only watched it on the computer, like from the QuickTime thing, and so I haven't seen like in full size or anything. But that's another thing, because going into Avatar, I really knew nothing about it before seeing the trailer, nothing at all. And so when I was seeing it for the first time, I honestly wasn't sure if it was full CGI or if it was people mixed with CGI, because I thought it looked... I was like, okay, this is like Beowulf. Oh, no, wait, those are real people. Oh, wait, okay, this is like Star Wars, like the prequel. What? And like, I was going back and forth because I seriously couldn't tell. Like, there was a scene where he like comes out of the ship on the wheelchair or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, it's all CGI. Like, that's what I thought I was looking at. I thought it was 100% CGI in that moment. So.
That shot's really bad in the trailer, too, because it's kind of, like, slow motion-y, but it's not very smooth slow motion. Like, it feels like it was artificially stretched out, and it feels really video game-y. Like, you can really see all the stuff moving in the background. I don't think those shots are final yet, either. But I think he's also, at the very beginning of Avatar Day, James Cameron talks to the crowd, and he says that everything that people have seen, it's only from the first two-thirds of the movie. No one's seen anything from the last third, and there's some people talking
two-thirds is from the two. That's a lot.
But like, think of even like most movies. You know, the one that I think was the worst, and I think you guys talked about, was G.I. Joe. Like, after I saw the trailer for G.I. Joe, I felt like I'd seen the whole movie, and then when I went and saw it, I completely felt like I'd seen it in the trailer. So I think he's making sure that, like, the one thing people keep on saying is that Pandora, the planet, is pretty much set up for you to see it at night. And all the stuff we've seen, except for just a couple of shots, have all been during the day. And they said, like, at night, Pandora's basically looks like what it would look like if there was a world that was underwater, but there was no water. And if you think about everything James Cameron's been doing for, like, the last 10 years, he did Titanic, he did,
More than 10 years, 20 years, Abyss,
yeah.
Titanic,
Kill Me Now, just Kill Me.
All the documentary stuff he did, the Ghost of the Deep, IMAX stuff, like, he's absolutely fascinated with that kind of world, and this might be one of the first times in a long time where I'm actually going to go to a movie and someone's going to say, I'm going to show you something you've never seen before, and they might actually be right.
I hope.
Yes, me too. I hope so much.
I'm hoping for that. You've calmed me down a little, Ryan, because I was
now watching it end up being horrible.
I don't know.
I don't think it could be horrible, but
I'll let it not be like another water world or
shut your mouth.
The Postman.
The Postman. What's another one? One of those ones that was just complete, utter meh.
the last time I tried to convince people a movie was going to be amazing was the year that Saving Private Ryan came out. And I kept on telling everybody, I'm like, man, Thin Red Line is going to be the best movie ever made about war. And I told everybody to go see it, and it was right after Private Ryan, and they all went and saw it, and they're like, I'm never listening to you again to talk about it.
Yes, that was one that one of my epic fails was Thin Red Line, even though I like it now, but that's just me because I'm weird.
I still like it way better than Saving Private Ryan. I think Saving Private Ryan is a great John Wayne movie with an amazing 20 minutes, but it's just a big action movie.
I love them both, but they're apples and oranges. And another one that I was telling everybody, oh, this is going to be so awesome, was Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones, Crystal Skull?
Yes. Man, I was like, come on, people,
still want my money back from that.
I actually knew people who weren't very familiar with the first three. I know. It's because I know a lot of younger people.
So many things in that movie I'm a huge George Lucas apologist. And I can't give him... I mean, that was the movie where it was like, all right, Steven Spielberg needs to just say, yeah, George, yeah, you came up with the idea with me. How about you go back to the ranch? Because there's so much stupid shit. George Lucas made up the scene where he's going through the forest or the jungle with those monkeys.
Oh.
That had nothing to... there's no way in hell Steven Spielberg had to be responsible for that. I will never believe that. I can't believe you can let it happen.
That's hilarious.
I was so mad seeing that movie. I can't believe I'm still upset about it.
Yeah, man. I don't know.
I'm still a mild apologist. It certainly wasn't half the movie I wanted it to be, it was not. It was not the worst thing ever for me either.
I'm totally cool with like a cranky older like crotchety Indiana Jones. And like the what's his name? Shia? He didn't even bother me, and I thought I was gonna hate him.
Yeah.
And even, like, pushing it forward to, like, the 50s and Indiana Jones is now, like, out of place. Like, I thought that was a cool dynamic. Even bringing Marion back, all that stuff was cool. But, like, there were so many things that were just not, like, in the tone of what Indiana Jones is about. You can't take a movie that you made three of and said, this is the world, and then totally blow it up and change it.
Yeah.
It would be like putting, like, angels in something like Battlestar Galactica.
Dude.
Did I say it?
Ryan, you know what? Let's shut it down.
Yes.
Let's shut it down.
It's a very inclusive show we have going to.
Goodness.
I know.
I'm
sorry. Indiana Jones got me to swear on a podcast for the first time. I apologize.
Wait, this episode of Sci-Fi Party Line is like if we did like one of those clip show best that like cover like, past grievances, past discussions.
Yeah. Well, I think the rambling is like the thing because we do that well.
I think you could put up a dartboard. You can put up a dartboard, 20 movies, and between like the three or four of us, just blindly throw at it, and someone's gonna have something to say about it.
Oh yes, yes.
And half the time, I'm gonna hate it, and someone else is gonna love it.
You didn't hate that much this episode, so you're
no.
You're good.
Oh, just wait till we get to another one where I really hate something. It hasn't really transgressed yet. Ice Cube and Ghosts of Mars.
Oh, that's the movie I was going to say I almost walked out of. But I almost, when I saw the fourth shot of a model train going by set to like a Casio keyboard, I was like, I'm done, man. I'm done.
Oh my God.
And I love that guy's movies. I love those movies. The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, those are all classics. But Ghosts of Mars...
Wow.
See, I hated it when I saw it, but looking back in retrospect, if you look at it in a grindhouse kind of way,
man.
You know, in a MK2, I can't even do that acronym right now, but if you look at it, if you look at it in that kind of way.
MST3K?
Yes, exactly.
Riff Trax, dude, Riff Trax.
Riff Trax is awesome. You know what else is really good? Have you guys ever listened to Down in Front?
What is this? What is that?
It's an iTunes podcast, but it's just guys talking about movies. Oh. But it's a little bit more like visual effects heavy, but because of that, they do a lot of sci-fi movies. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing as Riff Trax, where like you put the movie on, you go to iTunes, you download it, and you hit play. And while the movie's going, it's just a really good commentary. Mm. But those guys hate on Star Wars and hate on the second and third Matrixes, and there's some pretty classic moments on it.
I don't know. Those guys, that third Matrix...
If you take Matrix 2 and 3 and make one movie out of it, and you have the car chase at the middle scene, you take all the philosophy BS out of it, and then you take the Merovingian out because it doesn't go anywhere, but you have the war scene at the end, and it's just Matrix 1 and Matrix 2, I don't think anybody would have had anything to ever say about Matrix. But
when they tried to be all Star Wars... The Animatrix was beautiful, too.
Oh,
it had me pumped up for Matrix 3. Yeah. And then I saw that crap.
Yep.
I paid for IMAX, man. I'm still bitter.
Yep.
That's weird. I mean, I was okay with most of three. It was it was my least favorite of the three.
Dude, this is like the third time I want to hang up on you. Really?
Oh, hey!
I like three way better than two.
What?
Well, all that
what
war
did you
stuff
just say?
At the end.
What are you talking about? Like you? What?
Matrix 3 was way better than the second one.
Wow, that's.
I don't know you two guys. Like, really? Yeah.
But I mean. Yes, I want to be back. Because actually, the only part of 3 that really disappointed me was the final resolution ending. Because I was expecting
was
so much more.
That's the whole thing. You sat there for like 3 years with the damn Wachowski brothers, and they just took us in no Vaseline, these guys.
Yes, it was the weakest of the three Matrix movies. But it was no Speed Racer, is all I want to say.
Well, I didn't torture myself with that. I didn't torture myself with that, so I don't...
Watch it with Speed Racer. You guys don't like... fun kids movies at all. Have you guys lost your souls?
No.
I'm not the one that watched Ponyo, so I don't know.
I just like really bad movies.
I didn't see Speed Racer.
No, Speed Racer.
I loved Speed Racer.
Oh no, I did not love it.
Hmm.
But it was not as bad as I've heard it say.
I think I almost cried because it was such a family movie,
dude.
And it was all about, like, the family trying to support Speed
coming
in his dreams.
Story of Exactly.
What?
You know?
Y'all are so sensitive. I'm surprised. Wow.
Hey, I took my wife to go see Julie and Julia before I saw Inglourious Basterds.
That's because you're newly married. You won't do that.
She said we could go see either one. I was like, well, you took me to go see Avatar Day, so let's go and see Julie and Julia. All the while, Inglourious Basterds had just come out, sitting in the theater, waiting for me to sit down.
That's new love, dude.
And I saw a movie about Julia Child.
He's gonna get one of the most touching episodes of Sci-Fi Party Line.
Happy. We didn't say anything about Disney and Marvel. At 7:30 in the morning, I was at work, and we work at like a financial company.
Yeah.
So we have CNBC on, and somebody taps me on the shoulder, like, "Dude, look at the screen." I'm like, "What?" I'm barely awake. I'm getting ready to start editing, and I look over. I'm like, "Disney just bought Marvel?" I'm like,
"Yes, we have to talk about this."
There's another Marvel. Like, there's a Marvel that sells something that's called L, and it's spelled with another L. I'm like, "That's a typo. Disney bought some like sod company. There's no way in L." That they just bought the X-Men. I don't believe it. And then, they kept on talking about it on the news because it was like $4 billion. And everybody's like, "Ryan, are you going to be all right?" I'm like, "Disney just bought Marvel. Like, what does that mean for the Spider-Man ride at Universal Studios?" And, like, Marvel does, like, all these cool adult comic books. Like, they just started doing the Dark Tower series. Like, Disney's not going to let them do that. Yeah. I was all, like, getting upset. I don't know. But then somebody told me, that Joe Quesada, the guy who's editor-in-chief, he's a really good artist for Marvel, and he said that this is basically like when Disney bought Pixar. And I was like, all right, as long as they let Marvel keep on making cool Iron Man movies, and maybe they give Marvel enough money to go back and buy X-Men and Fantastic Four and Daredevil and Elektra and all those other horrible movies so no one can ever make them horrible again, then maybe I'll be fine with it. But I got worried for a second, and then I started getting excited because I was like, oh, man. That means Pixar can make like an X-Men movie because they already made the best Fantastic Four movie. It was called Incredibles. And then they could probably make a really good Wolverine movie. And then I realized like Brad Bird is directing live action and Andrew Stanton, the guy who just did WALL-E, is directing live action. I'm like, oh, man.
Okay,
they might really be able to make some awesome Marvel stuff.
You just made me think of something there. You know, it'll be damn interesting if Pixar ever comes out with a CGI movie like aimed at an adult audience.
Well, John Lasseter said that he had already talked to the editors-in-chief and all the main guys, like the main story guys with Marvel, because there's a ton of like Marvel zombies at Pixar. And Pixar just opened – a lot of people don't realize this. They just opened up a new animation studio in Vancouver, and nobody has any idea what they're going to work on.
Well,
so I'm wondering if like they're trying to like get something set up to do stuff like that. So either way, it's a good day for Marvel fans.
Okay, well, you made me feel better about that, too, because I wasn't that happy about that news. Cause I was like,
yeah, it sounds bad at first.
It does.
I remember the same
thing. You said Pixar, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, everybody smiles when they hear Pixar.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, that's right. We can make the Buzz, Woody, and Wolverine crossover.
Of course, Cat, who doesn't want to see Up.
Man, I thought we were past that.
Did you see it yet, Cat?
What? No.
Are you kidding me?
I know. What is this all? I don't understand this. Why do you have so many preconceived notions about so many movies that?
Yeah. Well, you have to go just for the Kleenex test, Kat.
True that. That.
We'll find out if you've lost your soul or not if you watch the first time.
It's very true. Very true.
Well, I cry on like everything, so I'll probably be depressed for a week on that thing. That's what I was trying to avoid it.
Go with someone that you can cry like with like a shoulder on, because it might hit you hard.
Man, that sucks.
Do you see like animated movies at all? Like, do you go and see like?
Did you listen to last episode?
wait, what was last week's? Was last week's Ponyo?
Yo, yeah.
Oh, did you have Will on it?
Yeah.
Oh, because me and Will talked like about Miyazaki for like 45 minutes without realizing it. We thought like 10 minutes went by, and he's like, "Oh man, we might have to redo this again because we stopped talking about Up, and we started learning about Anne."
Well, because it was a separate episode from G.I. Joe, so you may or may not have seen or listened to it yet, and
I'll have to listen to it now.
He didn't do a good job of convincing me to see Ponyo. I don't think I ever want to see it.
Did you ever see Little Mermaid?
No, that's just not my thing. It is not my thing.
Because if you've seen Little Mermaid, you don't need to see Ponyo.
You're killing Eric right now.
I loved it. Last episode. I absolutely loved it. I'm the nerd who has, like, Spirited Away storyboards in Japanese. Wow. Like, I have the whole... I love Miyazaki. But
you wouldn't let me talk about it. You wouldn't let me talk about it because it's
just like word for word from last
time. I can't try to talk about Spirited Away, but he kept bringing up Kiki's Delivery Service for some reason.
Who Will did?
Yes.
Oh my God,
did he talk about Porco Rosso?
Oh, he only said the name. He didn't get deep into that.
Because we talked for 20 minutes about pigs that fly planes. It was interesting. See, the thing is, Will's talking about the stuff he saw as a little kid. Like when those are the movies that he would have been younger. You know, like he's not talking about Spirited Away or Howl's Moving Castle.
It is
so funny. Oh, it is.
So he got slightly offended when I called Totoro like a big Pikachu. Like a big... Oh. He's like, no, it's not. It's a 6-foot cat monster.
A cat bus.
Are you a cat bus? Seems what you're saying, because that's what a Pokemon. But anyway.
I think we need to have Ponyo around too.
Oh hell no! I'm definitely not going to be on that one. I'll be watching Up.
where do you live, Kat? Because we could all just fly down and we could go and see Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. We could see Nine. We could see Up.
I do want to see Nine. Nine looks good.
My fingers are crossed that it does really well, just because I'm so tired of... Like, I want a slightly more adult animated movie to do really well. Like, Coraline was unbelievable, and it did kind of okay. But it didn't set the world on fire. And Did you see Coraline?
Yeah, I did. I bought it.
Oh, dude, that movie is so... I love that movie.
I can't look at buttons in the same way.
Yeah.
They creep me off. But it was really good. I was surprised that I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, but I enjoyed the 3D experience. It was beautiful. So.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Some take on the movie. I'd like to thank Dina Newby. You did well.
Thank you for having me.
What is your username on Twitter? So people, if they want to contact you, they can say hi.
I am Andromeda 0604.
Okay, cool. And Ryan, where can we find you?
I'm Otternod, Oddernod.
Okay. On Twitter. And Eric?
I am Bullet33 on Twitter, and now you guys can look for Sci-Fi Party Line on Twitter and the Facebook fan page. Please fan us.
Woo, I'm there.
Yep, and you can find me at Fancy Finbot, and that is our show. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Is Kat still here?
Oh, okay, now I'm here.
Oh, okay, that was weird.
That was weird.
Don't worry, everybody. Obviously, this will all get edited out, so nobody freak out.